Welcome to Experience Grind Podcast, the show about getting older and the experiences we've gained along the way. I'm Ryan, and this week I'm back in hosting duties again, and I couldn't do it without my group of, well, I guess you can call them my angels, if you will. First up, we have Kyle. Don't be fooled. He is absolutely the blonde bombshell of the group who, likes to dance. And then there's Sean. He's not a problem child, but he is our surly red-headed bad boy, often found smoking in the boys' room.
Ooh.
And then there's Brian, our savant, who I'm pretty sure knows everything about literally everything and will get us out of all situations.
Yeah, that tracks. I like that. I'll take it. Humbly, of course.
So that was an oblique way of describing the characters of the movie tonight that we're talking about, which is 2000's Charlie's Angels, which is a movie I suggested for the group. And now I have to be held to task for that.
Ryan, I love how you gave Brian the role of the character, like the only one that is worth their medal at all.
I also like that you did that.
I thought it was because Brian's favorite joke is the one about peeing in your Coke.
Is that your favorite joke?
What?
That was meta way of saying Brian likes to do that racist thing where you pull your eyelids back to look Chinese.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
See, I'm so unracist. I didn't know what you meant.
I also did not understand the reference.
You guys don't know the... The me Chinese, me play joke.
Oh, no.
Oh, yep, that's coming back now.
Me put PP in your Coke.
I don't think I've heard that since elementary school.
I derailed your entire thing. Ryan, you're welcome. I love you.
Wow.
Yeah. If you guys want to see what happens on Patreon, here is a good...
If you want to hear the stuff that we're not willing to say...
I was trying to not say of, like, it.
General public.
I was too broad. And anyways, yeah. I'm the blonde bim.
He's the blonde bombshell who likes to dance.
There was a good stretch of time where I was playing a game with myself of like how long before Kyle says something that would normally get somebody canceled.
Oh man, that's insane.
He's too damn charming to get canceled.
Well, that is an interesting way to talk around the movie tonight because again, this is a 2000 movie, and it feels like a very 2000s movie in a lot of ways, which we'll get
big
into.
Big time.
Honestly, we can just get into it. Let's just hop right in. We'll talk about the characters first. Let's see. Sean, what did you think? Or I'm sorry. I've got off track here.
I'm
a little
sorry.
Bit. No worries. No worries. And I also should have written this down just in case. I did not do that. So it's my fault.
Attaboy.
But before that, I would like to talk about our experiences with Charlie's Angels. First off, did anybody see this before? Is this anybody's first time? This is what we do.
This was my first time seeing this.
First time? I saw this bitch in theaters.
Same.
I rented on VHS at Blockbuster.
Okay. Tracks.
Way back when. But this is your first time, Brian.
This is my first time. I had never seen this movie.
I am more excited to hear your thoughts on this than literally anybody else's.
You know, I remember when it came out, and in 2000, I was like, I don't think that movie's for me. And now that I've seen it, I don't know who the movie is for.
Oh, man.
Even in 2000... Who was that movie for besides my dad?
Well, okay. Maybe that's dating it because I was going to jump in and say, maybe to the surprise of everyone, I feel this movie was made for me.
Yeah.
This doesn't surprise me, but yes. This movie ripped, y'all. I'll go down on the sinking ship this week.
No, it's I enjoyed my time with this movie. I'm curious who it was actually made for.
Here's the thing. It's all, and after watching it and looking at other things that Mick G had done, he has done some of my favorite terrible movies I've seen in the last couple of years.
That's fair.
I am very curious as to what those movies are.
The most recent one was the Beautifuls, I believe it's called.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Uglies.
The Uglies.
Uglies.
That just came out.
That's a really fun one. Really terrible. He did, what else here? He also did a lot of music videos, which makes sense. Yes. This is a very music video type of movie.
I feel like you don't give yourself the name Mick G if your intention is to do serious film.
True.
But he did do We Are Marshall, so.
He did, like, some Korn videos. That makes it. He did We Are Marshall.
Wow. I didn't know he did We Are Marshall.
We Are Marshall is, if you look at his full filmography, it's the one that stands out as being out of place.
What else did he do that is terrible that is fun?
Yeah, I mean,
The Babysitter.
Also, like, who is this movie for? Let's not forget the famous Dave quote. Like, that is a quote from somebody else.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Every movie is somebody's favorite movie.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have at least Kyle.
I'm just trying to figure out who that is.
I also.
My dad is dead, so.
I don't want to fully submit my foot in the Kyle camp, but I think I might be leaning Kyle's side a bit too. And I feel like this movie's got a lot of issues, but it might also be for me somewhere deep down too.
All right.
It's definitely a product of the time.
It's so much fun.
It is absolutely wild. You can tell it loved everything that took in. Like, McG was just like, oh man, I love all of this stuff. Like, the soundtrack is just like, here's the thing. It's also, this movie is for, like, your pop culture popcorn people. Like,
yeah.
It was very 2000s hip, sleek, sexy, cool. I forgot how many fucking people were in this thing. Sam fucking Rockwell?
Absolutely insane.
Right? Yeah. Tim Curry?
I'll bury it on, like, the casting here. We, like, talked about so many times in this movie about how many actors in this movie were like, wow, they're really underrated. Wow, this person's pretty overrated. But, like, one that we really just sent home was how underrated Sam Rockwell is and how kind of much of a heartbreaker it is that he's just not in more stuff, because everything that I've ever seen him in, he absolutely owns and crushes it. And I just want to see more Sam Rockwell in front of me. That's all I want.
I would subscribe to Sam Rockwell Plus.
Yeah.
When we were watching this, that's immediately what I thought. I was like, I fucked up when I chose Tom Hanks. It should have been Sam Rockwell.
That makes all three of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want that subscription.
Yeah. And it's not a huge catalog, but I would enjoy everything on it.
He is always fun. No matter the movie, he makes it worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's like a John Candy type. It doesn't matter the role of the movie. He's given it everything he's got. Mm. Same with Gary Oldman, man. Like, they just don't phone it in.
Yeah. And they understand the material and what they're meant to do.
Quick aside. Speaking of Gary Oldman, has anybody watched Slow Horses?
I have not.
Okay. It is a TV show. There's like four seasons. A fifth season's coming out. On Apple TV. It's incredible. Listeners, you like Gary Oldman? Full send it onto your TV. High recommendation.
Full send, baby.
Having not watched it, I can back it up because, again, Gary Oldman is just such a quantity. Like, he's proven. He's proven himself.
If there's one old man I like, it's Gary.
It's the Gary.
It was, like, literally seeing that. I was like, Gary Oldman, I'm going to watch this. And I'm glad that I did.
Nice. Perfect. All right. Well, good. Now that I have context for everybody, that makes me feel so much better. And now we can get into the ratings. Now it's a proper show. So we are going to hop into characters first, and I am going to throw it back to Sean first.
This is okay. So to lay this out for all of the listeners who may be new, we're going off of, this is five categories. 4 points apiece.
Five categories, five points.
Okay. Math doesn't math there.
20 times five, because there's four of us.
Okay.
Is 100.
Oh, you're so right. Be out of 100. I'm stupid.
No worries.
So I'm going off of 5 points. I will give this movie I mean, I'll give it a four. I think I'll be generous with a four there. I think all of the characters are fun, and I think a lot of the I don't know, a lot of the things that I might have an issue with are really based on the thing. Yeah, this movie came out in 2000, but it's also based on a show from the 70s, and you're taking all of the base characters from there and kind of modernizing it. But at the same time, you know, like Brian got Lucy Liu's character, Alex, who is awesome, but not as much of the fun one, but she's super smart and super, you know, whatever. Then you got Cameron Diaz's Natalie, who is a badass fighter, but holy God, she is so it like all I felt was Arrested Development in everything that I was watching going on with her. Then you got Drew Barrymore as Dylan. Yeah, that's the thing. But the bad guy's awesome. I really loved Sam Rockwell. Spoilers. Vivian, you have Bill Murray doing Bosley. That was great. I think a four is good. I don't know if I even made any points there, but they all were very entertaining in what they were doing. But I did have some quibbles with some of the characters in general.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's where I'll keep it.
Yeah, that's great. Let's hop into Brian.
I was amazed at this cast. I mean, everybody that Sean just said, but then also Crispin Glover, Tim Curry.
Oh.
And then in like bit roles, you have Matt LeBlanc and Luke Wilson and Tom Green. And it's just everybody keeps showing up. And you're like, this person's in that. There's like a 2 second cameo. It's Melissa McCarthy before she like blew up. And it's like, this is insane. Everybody's in this movie. The casting is on point. And like, I went through the IMDb trivia, and apparently they were interested in every single actress in Hollywood in the year 2000 and ended up with, you know, Drew Barrymore, who was always going to be attached because she was producing the movie and owned the rights to Charlie's Angels. Mm-hmm. And then Cameron Diaz and Lucy Liu. It's just unreal, the level of casting. When it comes to the actual characters, I'm less excited. But again, sign of the times, 2000. I'll tell you what my issue is with Who Is This For. I don't know if this is a women empowerment movie done bad, or if it is a male gaze movie done pretty fucking well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why?
And it feels like it's trying to do both.
Why not both? That's what the 2000s asked.
Yeah.
Why not both?
Is this a bad female empowerment movie or a good male gaze movie? And it's worth noting that the original show, Charlie's Angels, was not a comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
So at some point, we're talking about characters. We'll get into all that later. The characters are good. You know, you have the different girls who all have their different strong suits. And they are the heroes, which is fun to see in a movie that came out in the year 2000. I'm gonna give it a 4.2.
I want to touch upon someone that you mentioned. I didn't even think about like all of the extra casting and stuff. I could not believe. Okay, so we talk about Keanu Reeves and how timeless and ageless he is. And what's his name that was in I Love You Man and his Ant-Man?
Oh, Paul Rudd.
Is that guy? Paul Rudd, yeah.
Paul Rudd. Okay. Crispin Glover is like just as fucking ageless as those motherfuckers.
Crispin Glover is weird in that, like, always looks the wrong age.
Yeah.
You just don't know what age he is.
He looks plastic?
Yeah. He's a mannequin.
That's it.
But he's looked the same since 1984.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is nice that he's essentially Willard in this movie, that he brought that character back out of the closet again. If you've not seen it, he plays a creeper who loves a bunch of rats in New York and becomes like a serial killer with the rats.
Yeah. He's like Joker and Ratcatcher merged together.
It's a great book, too. I have that
book. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Came out 2004?
For some reason, I thought that was an old movie. My brain went stupid. I was like, this movie's from the 70s.
I only know that because I was looking at his IMDb today. And I was like, wait, I for some reason remember seeing that at a younger age. Am I just time traveling? Is this what's up?
That's the confusion that is Crispin Glover.
Oh, that's it. Man. I think you're right. We got a Tuck Everlasting situation.
There's no way to place him in the timeline because he always looks the same.
Mannequin.
Anything that has Tim Curry in it's automatically going to get a good score from me.
Yeah.
All great.
Even though he was only on screen for 10 minutes, I think.
But what 10 minutes they were.
What a 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Good God.
Kyle, what are your thoughts on the characters?
This is a 2000s action movie, and the characters are paper thin. And I think, honestly, they're kind of supposed to be. That said, everybody is fucking knocking that out of the park with, like, the littlest amount that they're given. Crispin Glover took more away from his character, and it's still somehow incredibly iconic because he's the weirdest creep ever. It's nuts.
So good.
I can't give it a 5, but I'm an enthusiastic 4 rather than the reserved 4 of my two previous pals. I think it's fucking great. I love all the different personalities of the girls, but yet they still are somehow kind of wooden and 70s-esque. I don't know if that's intentional or just the crazy fast McG shooting style. I don't know. They're fun. They're bubbly as they're supposed to be. Bill Murray's fun. I love that they went with like the 70s aesthetic style for him, like real hard they leaned into it. Like when he has the ascot at the party, fantastic stuff.
So good. And,
again, just a fucking another movie to have Tom Green. Gotta give it.
Was it the Chad? Chad.
It's the Chad.
Chad. Did the Chad do good?
Like the Chad.
All right.
4.
Perfect.
4.
I'm very happy everybody got 4s. Because that allows me to... I'm going to go with 3.
All right.
But it's an enthusiastic 3. It's not a reserved 3. Because I was torn between hands with a reserved 4 and an enthusiastic 3. And since everybody else is going 4, I'll weigh it down just a bit. Because... I agree with what everybody said about the casting. It's superb. I love it all around. Outside of, I think, Drew Barrymore, I don't know that she fits in. I think Lucy Liu has a very specific thing. I think Cameron Diaz has a very specific thing. I don't think Drew Barrymore ever gets there in this movie. Makes sense that she's a producer now. That said, I think also they're fun and bubbly characters, but they are so paper thin, I would say almost to a fault. I think the villain stuff works a lot better, but when they try to go for some of the more emotional moments and they do weirdly at the end with like the angels and Charlie, it means nothing. A lot of this means nothing because the characters.
Yeah, who gives a shit?
the characters are really nothing yet. I view this as more of like a great springboard for maybe future movies. Spoilers, I think the second one's even worse. but like they set themselves off for like a good sequel to really explore the characters because what's here is kind of a little empty. So I'll go with 3, just tamp it down just a bit. But I'm still on the positive end.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Just a bunch of angels desperately trying to seek stepdaddy and daddy's approval by the end of it.
Arguably why, I guess Drew Barrymore makes sense why her character would. Why would Lucy Liu's character have daddy issues or seek approval when she's literally like, again, a savant who can do and knows everything?
Yeah, that's a big thing. A little off-putting whenever there was a scene with like Bosley and they're just like, and it's like, man, this is so fucking weird.
I wish the next one was direction because we could talk about that male gaziness, but sadly our next category is story. So
story.
Let's talk about the story for a bit. We don't have to necessarily hop right into a breakdown, but we also, I don't think, need to go into elaborate detail about Charlie's Angels. It is a 2000s reboot of the 70s TV show. You are introduced very quickly to Bosley and the Angels. You know they work for this mysterious figure whose name is Charlie, who gives them assignments. And their assignment sets them up to go rescue a man, Sam Rockwell, i.e. something Knox.
Eric Knox.
Thank you. In doing so, end up uncovering a conspiracy against Charlie that the Angels must thwart. And I'll say that without spoiling things, because there's actually like a really cool twist in this movie. So if you've not seen it, this is your warning. Oh, I don't know. All right, I'm getting some looks like maybe it's not a cool twist worth spoiling.
Guilty.
So just know we're going to spoil it now. So some people think it's not worth it. Some people think it might be worth it. Save this.
Some people think it was broadcast pretty loudly and guessed it the minute they met that character.
Also,
did you?
Yeah. 24 years ago is outside the statute of limitations. You can freely spoil anything.
That's how I feel. That's how I feel too. But it is, well, it is a nice reveal. So we'll just say it. Surprise, surprise. Eric Knox is the bad guy, and he wants Tim Curry's company's data, essentially, in order to hook up with his information so they can track anybody in the world very easily. Because
they're super impressive GPS data.
What?
You can track people?
We have a global positioning
in retrospect.
There was a part in this where they're like, can you imagine if somebody could track you? Like, that would be really bad news. And I was like, oh, like today, in today's world, it's crazy.
I think that was one of the things, because it was so early on, it was like, it's amazing the things you can learn on the internet. And I wrote down a fun fact I learned on the internet. It's, did you guys know this? That the world's richest man is actually a Nazi douche.
Yeah, I think I read something about that on the internet.
Crazy.
Wild.
Crazy. Oh.
It
was crazy to hear how many times they said global positioning systems. And I'm like,
they just need to sound
GPS.
Fancy.
Like, it's so weird to hear that in 2020. It is weird. What is it, five now?
This emerging technology. Wait till you get your TomTom in your car.
It's when you go you into to like print out MapQuest anymore. They talk about like going online, and they're like, "We're going into the interwebs or the World Wide Web," and then they talk
What's
about
that?
In such vague specifics. We're gonna use the hyperlinks to navigate to our domains. It's like that. Nobody talks about
you're making me
like
want
that.
To. You're making me want to do one of the worst movies I've ever seen for this show.
The Net?
Why?
No, a little movie called Fear.com. It's about a website that kills you when you go to it.
Oh, so like
how do you
X.
die?
Oh, it's like X.
Yeah, part of me dies inside every time.
But it gets me coming back.
The big twist is Knox wants to use those global positioning satellite systems to track down his father's old wartime buddy, Charlie, who apparently did something bad in the war at some point, and now he wants revenge. It doesn't matter.
He thinks he killed his dad or got his dad killed. That's the story there.
Is that it?
But it turns out his dad was just a bad double agent and got caught.
I really did. I liked that reveal, though. It was very nice when, like, Nude Barrymore spells out the word enemy on the Scrabble table, and he goes, oh, I know.
Yeah.
Again, just right classic Sam blinked. Rockwell. Just
Sam Rockwell is playing two different characters in this movie, and both so well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Before the reveal and after the reveal, he's like this nerdy, subtle guy. He doesn't want to impose too much. And then after, he's just fucking cool guy, Sam Rockwell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nothing like, but dancing. It was just like such a smooth transition that as soon as he's up macking it on Vivian and just like talking to Dylan, Drew Barrymore's character, like nothing even happened. He's like, oh, it's a shame. You fucking rule in the sack too, but it's all good.
That's all part of
the fucking gun spins because he's just fucking cool now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's always cool.
The best part is when he's like, Eric he's Knox got his own little boombox in the castle and he's doing the dance and he's just like, ah.
No, as soon as they introduced Vivian Wood, the first time she shows up and they're like, yeah, this is our client. I was like, oh, she's the bad guy.
They did do something clever and they didn't convince me otherwise, but they did address that immediately by having Natalie called out and say, like, she did it. And then she walks
the
in.
Villain.
And then she walks in.
Beat.
It's a nice. Did McG subvert our expectations?
I don't know if it's subversion, but it's a nice little meta beat. And it is kind of. I like that.
Not as good a meta beat as the. Me. Oh, they're turning another TV show into a movie.
Mm-hmm. That's great. LL Cool J cameo, by the way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
Yeah. And then more meta commentary, and that a black man is being played by a white woman. White woman control the black man.
Mm-hmm. This movie was just an absolute buffet of cultural appropriation. It was
all over the place. Something.
It is all you can eat.
Problematic as hell, but that'll be saved for a
later.
Every
other scene.
Yeah. Let's get into the story and kind of how did the story work for everybody here. Again, we're gonna start off with Sean.
It existed. It was there. It was there to get us from beginning to the end. So this includes story, motivation, and screenplay. Screenplay was fine. The story was there. The motivation, I don't know. Their motivation is whatever daddy wants. So, sure. In terms of story, I'm going to give this a 2. It exists. It's there. It exists. Like, if this was the kick-ass-ometer, this would definitely get a 1 because there is a story here. Mm-hmm. But it exists solely for all of the action that's going on in the movie.
That's fair. So just slightly below average at a 2. We'll see how everybody else compares. I have a feeling you might not have a lot of opposition. But I think after that, we went to Brian.
Yeah. I agree with Sean. I feel like it's a very simplistic plot for how needlessly complex and convoluted they made it. Like, you have multiple characters fulfilling the same role with Crispin Glover and Tim Curry and Sam Rockwell. And there's too many villains, even though one of them is a red herring. Ironic that it's the one that points out the red herring in Clue.
And it's a redhead.
And it's just, I don't know. I know I have more I want to say about it, but I can't think of it right now. It's just, I was expecting more and also less at the same time. I felt like it was trying a little bit too hard. And and again, the plot and the story are basically just a vehicle to get to the next set piece. It was a lot of this happens and then this happens and then this happens, not this happens because this happens. So for me, it's also a 2.
Trend is developing. Kyle, are you going to buck the trend?
A bit. I don't think it's that bad. And again, after I started watching this movie, maybe this is my fault, but I personally had changed a lot of this classification to the kick-ass-ometer because this is an action movie. I even sent it to Ryan. I was like, man, you should have brought this in July. But in that, like Sean said, story only gets a 0 or a 1. I think this definitely passes the 1. It goes up to 2, but I'm giving it an enthusiastic 3. For the same reason, like, it's not deep, but at the same time, it doesn't need to be. And what I like about it is that there are kind of a lot of moving parts, but it never gets confusing, trips over itself, it's easy to follow, and it gets you there. So it's not the worst thing. It could have been better, maybe, but also, would you want it to be? Like, what would you really ask more for from a Charlie's Angels comedy movie in the 2000s? Is what I'm saying.
Something, like, okay, when you put it that way.
You, Is this rhetorical? Because I have an answer.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure you will answer too. I'm just saying, like, to me, it served its perfectly fine purpose. It's then that's why I'm giving it a 3. So
Nice. Well, even though I kind of pushed back a little bit at the end there, I'm right there with you, though. I am a reserved 3. Very reserved 3.
I like this new classification system we've introduced just now, by the way.
I do, too. It gives a little bit of context. Because this could very easily be a 2, because I agree with everything Sean and Brian said, except I would maybe... I would give more credit to the screenplay, because I do think you say this is an action movie, and while there's action here, I think it's kind of shitty action. What really works for me is the comedy, and I think this works much better as like this comedy thing. And I wish they leaned more into the comedy and less out of like this Matrix style action shit. But when it worked, it was the screenplay and the jokes they wrote and like the character beats and like allowing these girls, and I say girls, angels, to be like human and characters, like have their moments. Like, I love the Soul Train moment with Natalie and Luke Wilson's character. That's maybe my favorite thing in this movie, and it's not an action beat. And I say that, but it's not true, because Sam Rockwell is my favorite thing in this movie. But my second favorite thing Soul Train beat. And I think it's like this quiet little funny moment that has nothing to do with anything, but it's just like something for her character. A nice little funny ha-ha with Luke Wilson and the bodyguards at the end, which I love every time. Still got me on this rewatch. That's what works for me. So I do think there's good in the screenplay. The story is nothing. So a very reserved 3.
My second favorite part of this movie is the part where it has no connection to the rest of the movie.
It's the character moments. And that's honestly, I just wish there were more character moments. And Kyle, you said, what do you want more out of this movie? I wish we knew the girls better and they were a little bit more distinguished, a little bit more distinct.
And ask me that question.
What do you want more out of this movie, Kyle?
Cameron Diaz shaking her butt.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about music in a second, then. Yeah, I feel like anything I could add to this too is it almost goes too far into like fantasy booky thing, because like what I would want more out of this is I would just rather prefer to have like a Charlie's Angels that's like a James Bond with 3 badass women that are competent and don't like there's not this weird thing.
Well, Elizabeth Banks will tell you that you don't actually want that because you didn't see her movie.
Yeah. Oh.
The Elizabeth Banks one? Yeah,
The Elizabeth Banks one, she Charlie. She famously...
Is that Kristen Stewart?
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart was one of them.
And it was serious
That's what that
take.
Was?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Elizabeth Banks directed a Charlie's Angels movie in like 2019 and then famously tweeted out like, people say they want something and then nobody goes and supports it. And it's like, wow, all right.
Yeah.
Well,
was she also in it? Was she Bosley?
Yeah, she
was
Charlie.
She was one of the Bosleys.
She was a Bosley. That's right.
Was it good?
Didn't see it.
Because I want the comedy. I like the camp, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think Charlie's Angels is a stupid concept. It is 70s male wank fest galore. I don't appreciate it.
Yes.
But I do like when they lean heavily into the camp and make it silly and stupid, because it's a silly and stupid concept.
I like the camp.
They literally used to
fest.
Call it jiggle television in the 70s.
What?
Farrah Fawcett, baby.
Jiggle television.
It's such a weird dynamic that like none of them have seen Charlie, and it's like this big fantasy to see Charlie, and then they get to his cabin at the end on the beach and he's just creepily got a photo of the 3 of them.
He's got photos of other angels too.
Yeah, but it's you're weird, it's, man.
It's a little weird.
And I do think it's cool that they got the original Charlie, though.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a good voice. He's got a good voice for it.
You know what? When I think of Charlie, that's the voice I hear. But it is weird that he's just like this imaginary, almost imaginary man behind a speaker that tells these girls what to do, and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever, sure.
It's really weird to see
those scenes. We love you, Charlie.
While watching Severance every week, I'm like, oh, Natalie, get a hold of the board. Charlie's the board.
Going into that concept, it's also not far off from like The Wizard of Oz, and being this figure without like any humanity, and like that immediately, for me, when I see that, I'm like suspect as hell. I do not think of you as like a beneficial savior or anything. I only am just suspicious now.
Like, if they sure got Rockwell a third was... movie, maybe Charlie should have been the bad guy all along.
Yeah. I feel like Rockwell was probably onto something here. This guy is sitting behind a speaker having other people do this dirty work.
Sounds an awful lot like what happened to his dad.
Eric Knox was secretly the good guy all along.
Is this movie...
This was a villain's movie.
this movie was this close to being brilliant.
I actually enjoy this movie much more with this headcanon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that puts us right around, all pretty much right around the middle for story. I wonder if style can improve that at all. John did a good job earlier of describing the categories. Style is going to cover the style of the movie, the tone, the genre, and music involved. So all of this is wrapped up in style. So with that, Sean, what did you think of the style of Charlie's Angels?
Okay, so style, a lot of it was style-wise, it was pretty stylish AF. There was a lot of pretty cool places, some snazzy cars, the parties were fun. The genre, mixed bag of things. I have a feeling, I'm glad I'm going first, because I feel other people are going to be much higher on this, but the music tanks this for me. Absolutely tanks. It was the worst part of the movie. There is no time to breathe musically at all. They just go from song to song. There's a 2-minute stretch where we heard 4 separate songs. And if you wait one more minute, you're blessed with someone with no butt shaking it to Baby Got Back. Which makes no sense. There was 38 credited songs in the soundtrack. 38.
Wild.
I'm giving this, I seriously, just because of how much that almost ruined my experience of this movie, I want to just hate give it a 0. But I'm not gonna, because style, tone, genre can lift it up. I gotta give it a 2. But music in this movie almost fucking ruined this for me.
I love how heated you're coming off right out of the gates.
Somebody back then on the internet where they can learn things typed in songs with angels in the name. One of them.
Oh, yeah, baby. This
100% guy knew what every single one of them. And then randomly opened up a jukebox or karaoke thing and pointed to 20 other songs and go, put this in for a second and a half. Put this one in immediately after that one for 4 seconds.
It's so good.
Fuck that.
Oh, man.
The official movie soundtrack for this, 11 songs. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe only put 11 in it instead of the 38 that you put in it. Yeah, I counted.
It's worth noting that soundtrack went double platinum, though.
Yeah, because they only kept the good ones and didn't put Rod Stewart on it.
That's only thanks to Destiny's Child, right? Because wasn't that they had the exclusive song?
Independent Women.
I've got
Part 1 by Destiny's Child, which was written for this song, for this movie.
I believe so. Yeah,
Written for this song.
It was.
Which means, big numbers when you bring in Beyonce, obviously.
100%.
It's insane to me that this movie was nominated for 5 Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, and one of them was Worst Song in a Film, and it was for the Destiny's Child Independent Women song, and it makes sense to me and kind of invalidates the stinkers for me.
Yeah. It's looking smelling back, a little incelly over there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 2000, and you want me to listen to a a Destiny's Child song?
I mean, sign me up.
About 2000? Independent women? No oh, thanks.
Yeah, I thought this was music history, not that. Music herstory.
I think the music in this was actually a lot of fun. I think it is in sync with the frenetic pacing of this movie and the style. One thing I will say is you can tell that this is McGee's first feature-length film. It is, I mean, so much of this movie is overlit or underlit and just doesn't look great. But then there are parts that you're like, okay, this dude definitely learned a thing or two while he's making these music videos, because there's some really cool stuff, and there's some stuff that it's like, you know, he has a concept of an idea of how to do this. to borrow a phrase from some people who are, you know, out there. they used a lot of wire foo in this, mm-hmm. which is a technique that this movie kind of popularized a little bit in Western film, because it wasn't used a ton. And but at the same time, I have a quote from Guillermo del Toro here that's like, it was also kind of the nail in the coffin for this style of martial arts in Western film, because the moment you see Cameron Diaz flying in the air and you know that she's incapable of flying in the air and kicking five guys, you realize that it's done with wires. So he said, Charlie's Angels was great, but its fighting style was almost satirical.
Were you talking about the bicycle kick?
Yeah. Yeah. Among other scenes. Yeah. That just very improbable, but still fun and entertaining fight choreography.
I heard she taught that to Liu Kang.
Yeah. It's, if you're going on the Crispin Glover timeline, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely a time traveler. I really liked the music in this. And I can see how it would be distracting and take you out of it. Absolutely. I think there were enough good songs dropped in here to kind of overshadow the bad ones. And I kind of dug the Angel songs, if I'm being honest. I was like, okay, they're sticking to a theme. It's obvious and right in your face, but like, it felt accurate to the tone of the movie. Like, hey, like, this is kind of like a parody of something. We don't know what we're parodying, but we're parodying something here, and we're going to have fun with it. And so I think I'm going to give a 3 to style, and it's not an enthusiastic 3, but it's a 3.
I knew going into this that I was absolutely going to be the outlier, so I'm glad that I did go first so that other people could lift it up after me, for sure.
Yeah.
You're also not that much lower. 2 and 3 is still really kind right. of middle of the road. So even though like one is maybe more positive, I think that's speaking to this movie.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, what about you? What are your thoughts in style?
When I watch Predator, I call that the quintessential 80s movie. I'm making an argument maybe that this is the quintessential 2000s movie.
Ooh.
I don't know. To me, much like Brian said, this nails everything. I think because of the fact that 2000s was an era of freshness and excess and exuberance, the soundtrack hits all of those parts. It's so bombastic. One of my favorite things is music video directors that go on to do movies to see what they do. They don't all become Spike Jones and dude from Mindhunter. Why can't I think of his name?
David Fincher.
David Fincher, thank you very much. Also cut his teeth in music videos. Mick G is sort of the other way, but he's that good type of like tries, but still makes like enjoyable bad stuff. But to be clear, Charlie's Angels 1 is not bad, but it is very rough. But I don't know, it's, I give this, honestly, I'm going, I get the 5, plus don't I occasionally get a bonus point? I want to give this 6.
Wow.
I
feel,
holy shit.
This is fucking
that's big.
Home run out of the park. I love everything about it. I feel like he got what the mission was with Charlie's Angels, the movie, and he fucking nailed every aspect of it. As friending as it was, it's a movie that takes so much from other things. It's a love letter to, obviously, The Matrix. It has a fucking bullet time scene.
That's
it's
true.
Got the wire foo. It just took everything from the 2000s and wanted it to fit into its movie. I like it for that. It's crazy. Sam Rockwell chewing the scenery. That shit's fucking cool. He's got style at the ass, wearing the sunglasses, smoking his cigarettes like the coolest fucking guy ever. It's slick, man. Crispin Glover is creepy as fuck, but he sticks with you. The cane with the sword has style. The sniffing the hair. Creep status. Like, and it cements like, oh, this guy is a fucking weirdo creep. Not to be trusted. I almost always hate the movie song tie-in, but that's also an era
it's
of
like
the 2000s.
Favorite thing.
You had the fucking Spider-Man shit was everywhere.
Oh, I love
fucking,
that.
I think Saliva
Hero?
Had one.
By Chad Kroeger?
Mm-hmm. Hero by Chad Kroeger. Yeah.
That was Saliva and Nickelback.
Okay, so that's where I knew they had the one.
Josie, Scott, and Chad Kroeger, yeah.
I mean...
Uh-huh.
Yep. They were fucking everywhere. Independent Women, that song still slaps, dog.
It does.
I don't care.
Absolutely.
When that came
on,
I was like, oh yeah. Throw your hands up at
throw
me, girl.
Throw your hands up at me.
Again, they just throw in so much shit. It's very shotgun style. See what sticks at the wall. That's kind of where like the ensemble cast comes in. Style, like the fucking the Mission Impossible tribute where they break into this super elaborate fucking server room. The gel door, one of the coolest things I've seen ever. I don't know
I
where I've
that,
seen anything like that.
The gel fingerprint thing was the coolest part of this entire
thing. That thing was so fucking slick and cool. Also, I wrote down Twink Diaz, kind of cute. Not going to lie.
I do love in that scene. I'm glad that you brought it up. I thought it was interesting that they point out that the ground contact can't be longer than 0.25 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then they use a method where it's literally impossible for you to not be touching the ground for more than a quarter of a second. Like, why did you give yourself that limitation and then make me be like,
I really enjoyed the 2000s thing where Lucy Liu just comes in and commands presence of all these nerds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
that's
then, like,
thing that happened.
I loved it because then she's like, "Who wants to show me where you're by?" And it was a great distraction. And then, fucking gender bent Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz just like, I love when Drew Barrymore is just like showing her badge to one of the security guards, like, yep.
Yeah, that's me.
Great little bits, man. I'm giving this a 6. This was fucking slick. I had such a blast watching this thing, dogs.
Could I propose, you said this is like the quintessential 2000s movie. Could you imagine not another Charlie's Angel?
I mean, yeah, it was like Brian brought up, it's almost to parody satire level. It is like not another teen movie-esque. Like, I don't know. I think it's close, man.
Yep.
Quintessential 2000s movie is bold. But I see where you're coming from. That would be another interesting topic to kind of dive into.
Yeah, I would love to think on that further.
Perhaps maybe on Patreon.
Maybe.
Ooh, yeah.
I also just want to be clear. I did not come into this expecting to fucking have such a good time with this flick.
No, I thought neither I was did I. Like, it's okay. I'm glad
I was,
you did. Mm-hmm. Even if I come to a movie and I hate it, I'm glad if somebody else enjoys it, because then their time also wasn't wasted and they have like a good experience. That's great. That said, I don't hate it, and I don't know why I said that example right before I go into my thoughts. I kind of agree with everybody a little bit. I'm somewhere right in the middle of Brian and Sean on music. I think Sean's right. I think if Suicide Squad gets a bunch of shit for like the annoying, obnoxious amount of like on the nose songs used, Charlie's Angels might be number 2. But I also can't deny that I love that Destiny's Child song. And like every once in a while, they get one that that works. And then there's five that are so fucking obvious, but then that one hits. So, like, I'm fucking torn right there. And then, like, I'm kind of with Kyle and, like, and I think Brian said something, too. Like, you can tell this is McGee's first time and he's lighting things incorrectly. And, mm-hmm. like, the color grading's just fucking different in scenes. It's just all fucking over the place. It's
all
over
the place.
A kid in the candy store going and throw, like, choosing everything he wants that looks good. And it is just, like, the suicide of flavors. Like, it's the drink at a fountain. The fountain nice, drinks. Yeah.
Yes.
It's just everything. And so, like, I kind of agree with Kyle. Like, the style is something here because there's so much of it. But also, the style is sometimes maybe too much and competes with each other. And it's clashing styles and tones. And it, I don't know. I do still think this is a fun movie that is overall, it moves quick. It's got a good pace. At the end of the day, like, it's not a drag. And I have seen McGee movies that are drags. That Terminator movie pops up immediately. Fuck. It's do I want? I'm right in the middle. Do I want to be positive and go 3 or 2? I am a go 2 because Kyle went just so high that he's gonna make up for my 3. So I'm gonna go an enthusiastic 2.
I almost want to drop down my reserved 3, but I won't.
Can I go -3?
Yeah, am I allowed to do -1? I mean, if we could do enthusiastic, no.
All right. Well, wow, style was fun. I didn't think we were going to be all over the place in that one, but we were, and I like it.
Yeah, neither did I. I thought I was going to be, like I said, the one outlier, and I was just going to be like, all right, I'm out of the way. I'm stepping back. Have fun.
Yeah, I was kind of right with you. Everything you said, I kind of feel for the most part, but also Destiny's Child. but entertainment value, I think this one has the potential to also go all over the place.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sean, would you like to start us off again?
Yeah, sure. With everything that I just said and how music almost like tanked this movie for me, it did, but it didn't, you know? This is such a, for me, it was such a movie of dualities of, like, love this thing, hated this thing. Love this thing, hated this thing. Like, love the action in the movie, and then thought all of the Matrix crap was dumb as fuck. I'm like, why do you gotta do that when this fighting action was so good? And then you expect me, like, you're dodging bullets. And then you have this sick ass thing where Crispin Glover does this side cartwheel through this gate, so which sick. Is dope as fuck.
So cool.
And then pulls out a handgun and shoots at 3 people who are in 3 different places at the same time. They're all dodging bullets and they're 20 feet from each other. It's like, what is happening?
Ricochet, man.
So, like, with all of that being said, I was entertained by this movie. It was entertaining. It was fun. The quibbles that I had, like, man, I feel like half the characters were just absolutely brain dead. The action was awesome. Music sucked for me. But then there's this weird ass, like, I don't even know how the missile came back to the helicopter, but
oh, she reprogrammed
it. Sam Rockwell got done dirty.
It's great.
God damn. I'm giving this, I mean, it also, in terms of entertainment value, it covers box office. I don't think it really had an impact on the genre because, you know, there's another one and then they didn't do another one for 13 years. But it made quite a bit of money in the box office, and my entertainment value, it's going to be a 4.
Nice.
I was entertained by the end of it.
Yeah.
Well said. Very nice. Brian, you on this similar thought? Or are you
very similar. Oh, I'm very similar on this one. Sean nailed it with the dichotomy of the love this, hate this, love this, hate this. But at the end of the day, those 98 minutes went by so fast, and just, I was in it. I enjoyed it. I was like, I was frequently surprised by the blatant sexism or racism of some scenes. But then I was like, okay, 2000s, let's just stick it out. And, you know, all of a sudden, one of the producers of the movie has her fire suit for her race car zipped down to her belly button. And you're like, what is happening here?
These are like steering wheel.
These are three actresses who are at like the height of their game at this point. Why are they doing this movie? But damn it, if it's not a ton of fun. And it made something like 284% of its original budget back, you know, via Hollywood financing math, where they don't actually like tell you how much they spent on advertising, which was a ton, I'm sure. Because this movie was everywhere in 2000. It's just, I enjoyed it a lot. I'm actually giving it a full 5 for entertainment value. I was thoroughly entertained.
Amazing.
Very nice. Sometimes entertained by just how shockingly bad it was, but still entertained.
Yeah. Yeah. Samurai Cop is like this for me. It's a movie that makes bad choices, but those bad choices are so fascinating that that is the entertainment.
Samurai Cop, I think, has more self-awareness.
I'm not sure.
I'd also disagree with you.
I don't know.
Shockingly no-ish self-assurance.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is also worth noting that of the 5 Stinkers Awards that it was nominated for, it only won 2 of them, and it was Worst Supporting Actor and Unfunny Comic Relief, which both went to Tom Green, which is kind of unfair because the man literally just got diagnosed with testicular cancer while they were filming this movie, and it shares that credit with Road Trip. So it's like, did it really win those or did it not?
Also, man, before or after Freddy got fingered? Because I feel like there was a lot of backlash against Tom Green. Like, it was real cool to not like Tom Green at a certain point.
I think critics always hated
Freddy got fingered. Yeah. And I know
Freddy
got
fingered was after this.
Too.
I was going to say, I think it was after this. This was still that era where just like most people didn't get and therefore didn't like Tom Green.
Right.
Mostly in the mainstream. But he was also banging Drew Barrymore at the time, which is why he's in the movie.
It was after the Bum Bum song, but before Freddie got fingered.
Okay. So he was pretty big, but not the... Well, arguably, he didn't get that much bigger with Freddie got fingered, because it's a flop. All right. Well, thank you, Brian. I'm glad to see another 5 on the board. Kyle, what are your thoughts on entertainment value?
Obviously I'm right there with Brian. I also gave this a 5, and I don't have much to add. Just to counteract Sean's terrible music, there's also a bit where Pure Moods is playing, so that's fucking win in my book, baby.
Yeah.
I think it might have played for the longest out of any song in this entire movie.
Yeah, because it's when she's giving Tim Curry the foot massage.
Yep. Yeah,
which I think was a guest directing bit from Quentin Tarantino. He came to hang out with McG that day.
Yeah, put a pin in that for fetishy male gaze stuff, because this movie loves to go through the closet.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, that's again, we talked about this could have been in style, but I also like some of the things when they're telling her to do the hair flip, and she does the hair flip, and they're like, the hair flip always works, and it did work, just because I think part of that is the way that Mick G like got that style of shot, like, because it was very music video-esque. But I also like, I guess it was like an improv where Lucy Liu is in the red dress and the extra is just like, no. Just great shit like that, man. It was entertaining as fuck. I had a blast watching this the whole way through. I was smiling almost the whole time, laughed. Did a couple of the those type things. That's a 5, baby.
All right. I agree with everybody, but I'm leaning on the more positive side on this one. I'm also going to go with a 5. I think this is an extremely enjoyable movie. It has a lot of problems, and I think many of those will come up in direction for me, because I think they are largely attributed to McG. But for just entertainment value, not bringing anything else in, Sam Rockwell alone makes this a 4. And then every time he dances, just adds a little bit more. And he dances the entire second half of this movie.
It's Sam Rockwell must have a clause in his contract that he has to dance in every movie.
I think so. Brad Pitt eats, Sam Rockwell dances.
And he does
and
it
it's good.
So
red
glasses
for
too.
Oh, those glasses. Right.
And he was wearing that black tank underneath the black suit jacket.
He's so fucking cool.
And I've been watching so much Daredevil, I was like, wait, I thought the red glasses were supposed to go on the good guy.
oh, man.
Yeah, but, everybody here, I think, really brings a lot to it and makes it as fun as possible. Save New Barrymore, but that is just what it is because of producer. But I think everybody else just brings so much fun and likability. Especially the supporting cast. I'm even happy to see Matt LeBlanc in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's not something I expect always. I forgot he was in it, but I was very happy.
He's the right amount of Matt LeBlanc.
Got some good little beats.
Were you in there when that happened?
Yeah. Yeah, I echo everybody. I think this is a lot of fun. It's more fun than it has any right to be. 5 points.
Hell yeah.
Amazing.
All right. Now I think we're going to get some dissenting opinions, possibly, in the direction. This is going to cover the film as a whole, which is going to incorporate the vision and the execution of the director, who we have already named as one McGee. Sean, what are your thoughts on McGee? What did he bring to this movie?
Well, I feel like he set out to do what he wanted to do. So, I mean, 5 points. Just kidding.
It could be valid. I mean,
if you're going on that merit, then sure. But, I mean, I think there's a lot of problematic stuff in here. And it's like we talked about, you mentioned, is this for the guy gaze or is this women empowerment done poorly? This is like women empowerment, like, if everyone was demeaned the entire time, like you can't have both at the same time. Like everybody looks absolutely stupid through all of that. And they're just absolutely, I don't even know. They're like just they're just objects. And when you guys mentioned earlier, why is Drew Barrymore in here? Well, because she's the only one with boobs and they can do that one scene. It's like there's,
it didn't stop the other ones from trying to reveal cleavage. That happened.
Like all of the cultural stuff, like every other scene, they're taking on a different culture. So the movie literally starts basically in blackface. It's like, wait.
And then Drew Barrymore does actual brownface later in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah,
I don't know. It's, I mean, it sets out to do what the movie was meant to do, but like you guys said, problems with lighting and tones, and also like just harping back to my music thing, I couldn't help but feel like it was somebody who was just so uncomfortable and just letting a scene play out that they're like, "Gotta put music here," that I can't not dock points for that. Because it's just like it was just hitting me over the head with it. And you guys said this is like his first thing going on and he had history in music. Like, what the hell's the deal with the music video at the end where they're just playing Blink 182 for no reason?
I kind of liked it. I thought it was like the Austin Powers kind of end thing. You get the little gag reel, but like
it was so out of nowhere though.
I thought it was
kitschy. Just felt disconnected. I'm going to give it a 2.
It was disconnected, though. All right. That's a...
Yeah.
I think very well said. And
I agree.
You know, Vic G's going to draw some opinions here. So that was to be expected. Brian.
I'm going to start off by saying anybody that gives themselves the director name of McG... is already setting themselves up for a certain type of image, which is probably fantastic for doing music videos in the 90s. But when it comes to doing proper film, it's time to maybe adopt a new nomenclature. You know, maybe we switch up the name, use our government name or something similar. Mick some Jesus. Different stage. Mick G is just asking for like, hey guys, here I am. I have one name and it's not even a full name. It's just a Mick letter.
I feel like a guy
suck
called
on
Mick
that
G
Oprah
has a permanent backwards visor. Like,
yeah.
When I hear Mick G, I picture that guy.
Yeah.
Not rat tail, but just backwards visor for sure. Like that level of scum.
He definitely has like one of those pencil thin goatees.
The beard, the
and oh yeah, the what do they call that? The Hollywoodian.
Ugh.
You can tell this man has never seen $93 million before because he was like, I don't know what to do with this budget.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much more money than I've ever gotten to play with before. I want to try to do all of the things. And a lot of those things he didn't know how to do properly and was maybe just too afraid to ask other people for help. I don't know. But when Sean said the thing about him feeling uncomfortable without having music in a scene, absolutely, 100%, you can see that. And I don't want to hate on this because I did enjoy the movie. I gave it a 5 for entertainment value. But again, like Sean said, it's that dichotomy of I love this, I hate this, love this, hate this. I kind of hate the direction of this movie. And that's why I'm also going to give it a 2.
Well said.
All right. Consistent. Kyle, care to break that consistency?
I said the guy had a vision and he nailed that vision, which is weird to say. And then follow up with also in full agreement, I think this is a 2 for direction. It is terribly directed, but that's why I love it. The entertainment factor is so much there because of that for me. And it's different. The reason that Sean doesn't like it is one of the main reasons I do like it is because I don't know if it's that he felt uncomfortable. I think just being so deep in the music video world for so long, that's how he brought it out. If you've ever seen the fourth Aliens film, Alien Resurrection, that was also directed by a music video director, and you can very much tell so in the way that the shots are set up.
The director from Amelie?
I believe so. Yeah.
Can't think of his name. The French director, right?
Mm-hmm. But he got his start there too, and you can kind of tell in like the way that he does a lot of things. But yeah, I don't think that it's good direction per se, but it is weird how much he nailed the vision that he did want to. So it's hard to give him bad, but I think a lot of it was by happenstance. And I kind of think a lot of this movie was uncredited co-directed by Drew Barrymore.
I definitely think so.
So yeah. I think a lot of the competency that is there is probably more attributable to her and helping move things in a direction that were understandable. So
blame it on the woman.
I'm giving her mad credit because she was just a producer, but I do know that she was working very, very closely with Mick G throughout this entire movie's production. Okay. She had a lot of input, a lot of say on a lot of things, on how they went and did things. So I think, yeah, fair to say. But that still said, it's not great, so 2.
The overall vibe I got from the movie was that, like, women spies, well, this has to be a parody then.
See, you keep saying that, but then, you know, look at Starsky and Hutch, which is the same thing. Yeah. It's a remake of a 70s.
It could just be the 70s camp coming through.
I think that's what they do, because Dukes of Hazzard 2, even though that was more of a comedy with action, they camp it up super hardcore. I think that was just the style of the times.
Honestly, what I would compare this more to is the Dukes of Hazzard remake that did turn it more into a comedy, because they didn't have confidence in the idea or theming of the show enough that they just had to turn into like the aughts comedy, bring in the Knoxvilles and whoever to make it work. And for that, I think there's a lot that works in here. Though I think I'm probably going to be right with everybody though I might talk myself down a point on direction if I keep talking. I think Mick G has a lot of issues. I don't think he's a good director. I would not be surprised to hear that Drew Barrymore had a huge hand as a producer, like kind of guiding the ship, so to speak. I've said it before, I think he's kind of the director that throws everything at the wall and sees what sticks. There's no cohesion. There's not any kind of cohesive theme outside of boobies. There's a fucking scene that talks about boobies. Two fucking kids describing boobies before we see boobies. There are so many gratuitous fucking cleavage shots and butt shots. And it is just so much fucking male gaze out the ass. And I literally think this is the only thing he added. I don't know if Mick G is uncomfortable with having things go without music, but I would think it's because he doesn't know how to like let a beat fucking sit. He doesn't even let the action sit for like longer than like a couple seconds. He chops it up to hell. Anything that does look cool is usually edited in a way that is too much, and you can see glimpses of like good ideas, but he doesn't let the moments breathe. He doesn't let the characters breathe. He doesn't let anything breathe. It's just a fucking rush job to get through the end. So, you know, I did talk myself down. It's going to be 1 point for direction. I gave him the 5 in an entertainment value to balance this out. But, like, I don't think he's a good director. I think this is very emblematic of a first-time director. And anytime he goes for anything outside of, like, slapstick funnies, I think he fails. It's not great. Sorry, something you, G.
Something you said there about like the action and it's all cut to shit reminds me of Kyle had mentioned something about Jackie Chan. Like this was a couple of years ago, and his ideology on directing fight scenes, and where it's like, okay, so if you're gonna do a cut, you do part of the action and then you do that action again in the cut, so your brain connects it all together. And that's if you have to. Why are you cutting at that point?
Right.
Why are you letting someone just create the image in their head when you can just show them what's going on? And there were several times in this movie where an action was just butchered to hell. It's like, why did there need to be 3 camera cuts for this one kick?
Yeah. It's the focus is on the action of doing the move instead of the reaction to show its impact. And you can tell this is a man who's used to telling stories in 3.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Also, one thing I did like, there's the part where like Drew Barrymore is doing this elevated karate kick, and they have a first person view of like her leg kicking 2 dudes, and it's so obviously almost like a pool noodle with it's so floppy. I rewound it like 3 times and was laughing at it. That part was great.
I don't think there's going to be another opportunity to talk about this, but this is from that scene. Okay. I thought Drew Barrymore's character Dylan was okay. And was immediately disqualified as any credible character in this movie because of this entire scene where she is tied to a chair, tells them exactly what's going to happen, and then does none of it because she is that inept. You right? All are going to be face down. None of them are face down. I'm going to moonwalk out of here. That was not a moonwalk.
That was the funniest part. I was like, bitch, that ain't no moonwalk.
Yeah.
God,
ScarJo did it better.
Oh, if you're gonna tell me you're gonna do something, fucking do it.
Moonwalk's not hard. Cameron.
Hey,
Diaz,
fun fact: the airplane set and the opening sequence was reused immediately after completion of the film in the adult film Cockpit 1.
Ooh, incredible!
Like, they wrapped on this, and they were like, "Get these guys in here. They got a bang." They
got. Did it also have Drew Barrymore inside of LL Cool J's skin?
Yeah. Stunt cock.
All right. Well, that wraps up our categories. What are we going to try to guess what we think the score is going to be? We didn't do that this time, I think. So I think we're just going to hear it. What's the total score for us?
Total score we gave Charlie's Angels is a 64.
Okay.
Holy shit.
In my head, I said 72, so.
In my head, I said 40.
Yeah. You know what? I think we landed in the right spot then.
64 still puts us as maybe some of the most positives.
Yeah. We're below the...
It puts us above Rotten Tomatoes, right?
We're below the Rotten Tomatoes critical score, which is a 68. But we are above the IMDb Metacritic scores and way above the Rotten Tomatoes audience score, which is only a 45.
The audience didn't like this? That's shocking.
Yeah, how did the critics like this more than the audience? Yeah.
I have no idea.
That's a rarity, because I feel this almost is tailor-made 70%. For the popcorn audience.
One thing I saw was somebody called this movie Cheesecake, and I was like, yeah, absolutely, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Perfect word.
This is campy to the max. There's no part of this that should be taken with any grain of seriousness. Bill Murray's casting should tell you this. Tom Green, as a love
should
interest,
tell you this.
Should tell you this.
Yes.
The Chad.
All right, well, that's... All right, we are kind of mostly in the positive outside of critics who really like this, but not far off. So it tells us we got this one right again, as we do. We just keep getting these right. So listen to us. Obviously, we know it all when it comes to movies. But I am curious as to what we're going to cover next week.
It's not me, actually. If you guys remember, next week is we'll be opening day of baseball. And so we will be joined by our good buddy Dave to talk about the movie Bull Durham, a Kevin Costner baseball flick. So get excited about that one, everybody.
Not Field of Dreams.
Not Field of Dreams, Ryan.
Very important distinction.
Field of Dreams.
No matter how hard you try, if you build it in North Carolina, they will not come.
Saying nothing more than I have seen both movies, Bull Durham is better than Field of Dreams.
Okay.
So.
Is that a low bar, or I don't...
Yeah, it doesn't tell me think of either movie, really.
I don't like Field of Dreams. I think it's a boring snooze fest.
Oh. So it's a low bar.
I've never seen either movie. So. Yeah.
Well, Ryan can't even get 10 minutes into Field of Dreams, he says, so.
Field of Dreams is boring.
It sucks. I've seen it. Fucking sucks.
I've seen the cover art to The Rookie.
I've seen The Rookie.
I feel like the most recent baseball movie I've watched was Angels in the Outfield.
Okay,
Christopher Lloyd.
So. I loved that.
Oh no, I saw Moneyball.
Moneyball's great.
Oh, Brad Pitt.
Have you seen The Fan with Robert De Niro?
It's a good one. The Fan's great.
The Fan is great. Ryan's
De Niro Plus would be good too.
Yeah,
I would also do De Niro Plus.
Yeah,
but yeah. Did somebody next week we'll be Dave with Bull Durham, and then I will take over my regular duties the following week. And I think I have it planned, but they usually always change last minute. So we'll
see. That. You'll find out next week. So tune in.
You'll find out next week. So
and then Kyle's pick.
But until then, Sean.
Yeah.
Tell them where they can hang out with us.
Oh, okay. So, if you heard me just talking about De Niro Plus and we talked about Sam Rockwell Plus and all of that stuff, that's something actually coming from the Patreon where we talked about subscribing to certain actors instead of, Hulu, stuff like that. So if that piqued your interest and you want to hear more, head on over to Patreon. patreon.com/experiencegrind, where you're gonna get bonus episodes every single week, where I'm not sure what we're gonna talk about after this, but I don't know, stick around, come on over, sign up for as little as a dollar, and find out in a couple of days. With the added benefit of that is if you're a Patreon subscriber on our Discord, you can hop on in and view us recording our episode each week. Cool little thing that we just started with this episode, and it's a good time. So I'm glad that anybody who is a subscriber, and you, if you've stopped in, hey, thanks for stopping in. Our Discord link you can find in the show notes of every episode that go out. So come on in, hang out with us, and thanks for thanks for all your support. It means a lot. So with that, Ryan, I'm going to kick it back to you.
Well, thank you guys for, you know, indulging me once again on another blast from the past. Sometimes there are I love you mans, and sometimes there's the, you know, McG's Charlie's Angels. But I will not make you watch Full Throttle, because, again, much worse. And I don't think...
I might.
It's...
I might, too.
Maybe
depending on how you watch it, Charlie's Angels is free on Pluto TV, and so is Full Throttle. So you can do that. Watch them, not pay a dime. You have to put up with a lot of fucking ad breaks. Like, a lot.
Pluto TV. Well, I don't regret less than what I expected,
to be honest.
Oh, then I'm glad I paid for it.
Yeah.
Because I was going to go the Pluto TV route, but if you get Pluto TV on like an Xbox or a PlayStation, it's not on there. They have like half of the selection of all of the stuff that you can get on your computer or phone.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And I said, fuck this. I'm just renting it. And I'm glad I didn't have to put up with with ads.
Yeah. A lot of Liberty Mutual ads. But we're not talking about Liberty Mutual. We're wrapping this shit up. So thank you all for joining. Thank you for just listening to this podcast. And thank you, fellas, for, again, indulging my choices. Listeners, audience, please go. God, I really wish I had something off the hip here. But, like, nothing Charlie's Angels puns comes up. Go. Go. I don't know. Just have a good day. I don't know. What is Charlie's Angels even? Go rock yourself. Much better. That's.